Hey guys, I am so excited for Ethos Training Systems to be the official sponsor for my podcast, Getting Zen with Gen Z. They are located at 314 West Institute Place, Chicago, and are Chicago's first sustainable strength, conditioning, and mobility group training facility. Their three main focuses are fat loss and conditioning, strength development, and injury prevention and mobility. Be sure to sign up for their new client promo at ethostrainingshy.com and make them your number one for all your training needs. Follow them on Instagram at Ethos Training Shy for awesome tips and updates. Getting Zen with Gen Z, empowering, motivating, and inspiring you to live your happiest, healthiest life. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Getting Zen with Gen Z. This week, I have my good friend, Allison Fink, joining the conversation. Allison is a health teacher at Lake Bluff Middle School. She's also the volleyball coach at the middle school and Stevenson High School. She's the author of the book, Navigating Middle School, A Guide for Parents and Teens. And lastly, but not least, the owner and founder of Create and Implement Curricular Strategies, for short, CIC Strategies. And on top of all that, I mean, she's an amazing, amazing human being and a client of mine. So we're going to have a lot of good stuff to talk about. Thank you for joining me today, Allison.
Thanks, Jen. I'm so excited to be here and talk about some mindfulness and Reiki with you today.
Yes, I can't wait. So you know how important I think I look at mindfulness and implementing that into our daily lives. And, you know, as you being a Reiki client, I've really wanted to be able to have someone on where I've talked about this on the podcast several times and mentioned Reiki. But I want to really talk about what it is and have someone here to give the perspective of what it's like to receive it. So that, you know, people realize it's not something so like hokey pokey and that, you know, it is very tangible and it's a very awesome, relaxing, beautiful experience. But first I want to talk about you a little bit. What got you into wanting to be a teacher?
Oh my gosh. So I've been around Colorado, Florida, back here in Chicago. And when I was in Colorado, I started coaching volleyball at the high school level. Mm-hmm. And I should have known from the beginning that I was bound to be a teacher because it runs in my family blood, and my great grandmother was a teacher also. So, I decided that I needed to move back home and go back to school, and so my parents were kind enough to let me live with them again.
Okay, you gotta love that. Hey,
young
I'm still
age
there.
Of 30, you know. So I did that, and I started to go back to school and got my teaching certification in both health and PE because I loved the coaching aspect so much, and I just loved seeing the light bulb go on once a student or once an athlete understood what I was trying to teach them. Mm-hmm. And so that just lit a fire under me, and I was like, I need to do this.
That's amazing. How many years have you been teaching now?
This is my 11th.
Wow.
You know, time flies.
Yeah. And has it always been like middle school, high school age?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
So I teach
experience there.
6th through 8th
okay.
Health class. So those of you who have teenagers out there can relate as to the challenge of that job.
Oh boy, I can only imagine. That, gosh, I remember health class, man. That was, yeah, interesting.
To say the least.
To say the least. That's all. I'm leaving it right there. It was interesting. But I mean, you are just such like a kind, genuine, amazing person. I feel like you just have the character and the personality to be a teacher, a mentor, a coach. I mean, I feel like that really is kind of the role that you're meant to be in.
Yeah. I have to say one of the things that I enjoy the most is obviously the teaching aspect, but you know, when kids come to me and they want to talk about this friendship problem or something that's going on in the home, I really enjoy being able to talk to them about how to resolve those problems or what they can do to actually overcome that. And honestly, mindfulness has been one of the things that we have talked about a lot, just in that small group, but also in classes. I started doing mindfulness practice with my students at least once a week, sometimes more depending on the class, but I think it brings such a good unity and a level of trust with me that they can come back to me when they have questions or situations that they need help with.
That's amazing. I mean, to be that guide and person that they feel comfortable with coming to. I mean, because you see these kids all the time. So obviously they have their family unit and parents and other adults they can go to. But, you know, I think there's just so much stress nowadays, and especially for kids. I mean, we grew up, I think, even in a time where we didn't have like social media and so many outside distractions.
Right.
So I can't even imagine what that part of it is like. But I think there's a lot of academic pressure, too. So,
definitely.
You know, I think being able to teach and utilize these tools, such as mindfulness and meditation and Reiki, breathing, you know, simple things like that, just to kind of help kids become a little bit less anxious and stressed is, you know, very important to incorporate into the classroom. What made you start kind of wanting to focus on this? When did you start bringing this into the classroom?
So I started doing this a couple years ago, mainly as an experiment, because I wanted to see if it would really change students' behaviors and change focus and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wanting to make sure that every student had the opportunity to learn, because sometimes when you have a student in the room who's, you know, taking up all your time and all your energy, it takes away from the learning from other students.
Mm-hmm.
So the mindfulness portion, initially I started to do it so that I could have a more calm, relaxed environment.
Right, absolutely.
And I had this student one time, he does have ADHD, and I'll never forget this. He came up to me and he's like, "Oh, Miss Fink, I don't know if I can do this. I have ADHD, but I'll try." And I said, "Great. You know, just lie down with us. See what happens. You know, close your eyes if you want to actually walk through the steps with us. Great. If not, just, you know, be quiet and respectful of everybody else."
Mm-hmm.
And next thing I know, his eyes are closed and he's totally into it. And he got up when we were finished and he was like, "Oh my gosh, Miss Fink, I totally love that. And now I know how to combat any issue I'm having with my ADHD, and I'm going to try it at home." And for me, in that moment, I was like, yes,
that was everything.
We're doing this.
Yeah, that's incredible.
So it was pretty amazing, and I'm so glad that it has become a habit, because the kids ask for it all the time.
I mean, that's truly amazing. I think, you know, being able to offer that and them wanting more of it and making it something that's consistent, making that habit, that regimen, and having you promote that and you know, want that for your kids and students. But I mean, I know you do this for yourself too. And that's kind of, I think, how your journey started a little bit too, with wanting to incorporate it.
Yeah, I needed to find something. So I was doing Reiki with you, and so I was having all of these great experiences and feeling emotions that I needed to feel, but also feeling energized and clean in a way. I don't know if that's the right terminology to use, but I started to look more into the mindfulness for myself, because I was doing it for the kids and it was helping them. So I'm like, I think I need to do this for myself.
Yeah. You're like, I need to lead by example here.
I know. So I started, you know, I do it every day, 5 minutes up to 20. I generally don't go more than 20. And I have found that I am much more calm, especially when students get on my nerves. But I have also found that I am feeling emotions that we tend to stuff because so much is going on in our own lives that we need to kind of reach into those and feel those emotions. And I think that's scary for people.
Oh, 1,000%. You know, I think we suppress a lot And definitely. And a lot of it, I think our lives are so busy and we're so stressed that we just don't have time to deal with things. So it's kind of a mix of things, of avoidance, not wanting to deal with it, not definitely. Having time, not allowing ourselves to feel emotional because we think that's a sign of like weakness. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I tell a lot of my clients, and we'll get into a little bit more of, you know, what exactly Reiki is and what goes on. But you have to feel and express what your emotions are, because the longer you let them build up, that's when things can start getting a little bit explosive. And, you know, we take stress for granted, but it has a lot of different health issues.
Right.
And it, you know, people can start forming chronic stress and all these other health issues can start, you know, right. coming up. So it's something that we really have to address right away, because I think if we are just allowed to feel those emotions and what we're going through, we can then let go and move forward and move on. And it's almost like, you know, a physical weight has been lifted
Definitely.
Off your shoulders.
I just to touch on the scientific aspect of it, right? So mm-hmm. you talked about stress a little bit, and our sympathetic nervous system is in charge of our fight or flight
Yes.
response. And so if our sympathetic nervous system is always on high alert and always responding, then our parasympathetic nervous system, which has to deal with the emotion part of it, mm-hmm. And kind of the chill part of it, so to speak, your body doesn't get a chance to actually relax. And so that's, you know, what you're talking about, the disease always, you know, you can get diseases
from. Yeah, that's where it harbors,
yep. Right. So I think one of the things about mindfulness that I have found really beneficial is just, you know, your mind is not going to quiet down necessarily. And I think that's a misconception
I'm
for many people.
I'm glad you brought that up. Yep, 100%.
But your mind is not going to stop. Like, that, right. that's not possible.
That's not what it is.
Right? But trying to focus in on a certain something, whether it's a word, whether it's your breathing in particular, you know, you can always come back to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people start to think about their to-do list as they're being mindful or meditating, and that scares them. They're like, I'm not doing it right. Well, you are. Don't freak out. Keep at it, because I think that's one of the biggest things is that people don't feel comfortable for moments, and then they're like, oh, I'm doing it wrong.
We're so hard on ourselves.
Yeah.
Everybody's always like, well, I don't know how to do that. I'm like, there's no right or wrong way.
Correct.
And I think just to kind of allow the audience, you know, we keep throwing out the word mindfulness, but, you know, mindfulness really is just, it's similar to meditation. It's just a quiet time for yourself.
Yeah.
You're kind of, you know, scheduling in that moment, that check-in mm-hmm. with you, and just being aware and present of what's kind of going on.
Yeah, I heard a really good definition of mindfulness that I want to share. So there are some videos out there from, let me see if I say there, Julie Saltzman and Josh Saltzman, release video. It's called Release, and then also Just Breathe. And kind of the concept there was the amount of stress and pressure that not only kids are under, but adults are under mm-hmm. too. And just to sit back and take that mindfulness piece. But the definition, here we go. Paying attention to your life here and now with kindness and curiosity. And I thought that was so profound in those few words, because we are not compassionate to ourselves a lot of times. And so just that kindness piece and being open. You know, being mm-hmm. curious about the practice and things like that. I thought it was perfect.
Well, you know, one of the things that stuck with me is a friend of mine when I was going through my divorce. And I've relayed this message to several clients, friends, is to be gentle with yourself.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, we show kindness to others, but we're oftentimes like our own worst enemies. And it's like, you have to, you know, cut yourself some slack. You have to be gentle with yourself, compassionate towards what your situation is, what you're right. going through. And just being present and evaluating and kind of looking at your life and sitting back, you know. And when we talk about Reiki too, I talk about detachment a lot. I think mm-hmm. that's one of the biggest things I love to talk about, as Allison is smiling
yes.
here. But when you can kind of, you know, and that doesn't mean not being emotional towards something.
Right.
But you're stepping back and kind of taking a view, you know, it's a different vantage point, stepping outside of your situation and offering yourself a little bit of a, you know, better guidance, or thinking about what would I tell this person going through, you know, what I'm going through. Mm-hmm. Just because we're so attached to things, and it's like you need to step back a little bit and look at it from a different angle. And then I think you're able to cope and deal with it a little bit easier.
I agree.
Than when you're just stuck in the midst of it, if that makes sense to people. But, you know, there's no wrong way. You're not going to turn your mind off completely.
No, never.
It's too hard to do. And that's not really the point. We're utilizing our mind. But like you said, focusing on a word or focusing on breath. I had Daryl Jones on. He's at Chill Meditation and Massage in the city, and he leads meditation practices all the time. And one of the most, I call him Mr. Meditation, but you know, and I've said this before, is implementing breath. A lot of times we don't breathe. And, you know, when I guide people through guided meditations, or I'll tell clients when you're at home, he suggested you brush your teeth. You brush your teeth twice a day after, you know, you should. If you don't, you know, whatever habit you're doing, twice a day at least.
You're not starting out.
But
people.
Yes. But to take in 3 deep breaths after you brush your teeth in the morning and at night, that could be the start of a ritual and a meditation practice.
Definitely.
But coming to your breath is always a great way to hone in on your mind and exercise it and release all those other thoughts and the clutter in our mind a little bit.
Yeah. And I think, you know, going along with that, you say, think about the breath, which mm-hmm. I think is a huge component. But it's also, what does that breath feel like?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is going on inside of you? And sometimes, you know, I've done mindfulness where I just feel a heaviness in my chest. But had I not really sat down to take those breaths and be mindful, I would have just kept going on with my daily life. And there's obviously something there, right? There's mm-hmm. something sitting there, whether it's a happy emotion, sad emotion, frustrated, anger, whatever the case may be. I think it's also just being aware of what you're feeling in that moment.
I couldn't agree more. Absolutely. You can feel that energy.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Sitting inside you, and you have to honor it no matter what it is. But that's kind of how you will be able to deal with it and eventually, you know, let it go and release it if you need to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, because all that can just build up inside over time if we're not taking that time out. And, you know, we had talked about this earlier as we were on the train together, the train ride in, which was lovely. But, you know, there doesn't have to be this set. I think we kind of overwhelm ourselves and set ourselves up for failure when we're like, we have to meditate or, you know, be mindful, have this practice for at least 30 minutes a day. And, you know, I'm of the belief, if you have 5 minutes for yourself, 2 minutes for yourself, take it. It's better than no time. You know, anytime you can find, but I think the key is just being consistent with it and doing that daily. Because then look at all, if you have 2 minutes a day, every day, that's a lot of time that you're accumulating for yourself. And that's definitely a good start. And you need to exercise your mind just like your body. Because then you'll find that it's so much easier to get to that state quicker, that relaxed state a little bit, that more zen state, you know, if you will, getting zen with Gen Z. You know, so it's just, you have to practice.
Yeah, and one of the, so I've been taking a mindfulness course, and for those of you who are interested, if you go to mindfulschools.org, they do an amazing job, 6-week, just fundamentals mindfulness course. But then you, for those teachers out there who want to incorporate mindfulness into the classroom, they also do another course, how to teach students the mindfulness practice. So if you're interested, check it out. But one of the things that they teach you in this initial part of the course is that, you know, like we're just talking about, 5 minutes here and there. Again, it doesn't have to be 20, 30 minutes, an hour, whatever you're thinking, all at one time. And I think that's really useful because, especially as a teacher, there are times when you walk into a classroom and you're like, ugh, I have to deal with these students. And, and you don't want to.
Right. I mean, yeah. You know, you're just as human as anybody else. But
so,
then you have all these students to take care of as well.
But then being mindful that that's what you're actually feeling.
Right.
And then to be able to walk into the room and be like, okay, like I love these people.
And that's and a perfect time, like, to let me take a deep breath.
Exactly.
You know, we can always calm down and come back to our breath in any moment that we're feeling anxiety, stress, or we're anxious. It's like, just breathe.
Agreed.
You feel so much better.
It's interesting because I've been to several classes and I had an individual who was experiencing anxiety. And one of the things that they taught us in this particular class was instead of saying, let's get rid of your anxiety, mm-hmm. let's pause for a minute. And you're in that moment, your body's trying to tell you something. So what is going on? So are you scared, nervous, whatever the case may be, but you also have to turn it around into the positive and say, you know, hey, I'm strong enough to handle this, so let's get after it. But I think, you know, when we suffer from anxiety or fear or anything like that, it's just knowing, mm-hmm. being aware of that, and then telling yourself you're strong enough to handle it.
Absolutely. And that's why, you know, I have a lot of my clients, I tell them journaling is a great thing too, because mm-hmm. you want to recognize, you want to take that step, you want to take that breath.
Right.
And then you want to say, okay, what am I feeling? What is this? Is this the fear? And then a lot of times when we recognize that and honor it and look at, okay, what am I afraid of? Mm-hmm. What's the worst case scenario? When we actually look at what those are, mm-hmm. it's like, okay, I can handle that. That's no problem. Like, this is what could happen. If it does, I can do A, B, or C. Like, I'm prepared. I know what I can do. And, you know, I'm strong enough. That's where the positive self-talk then comes mm-hmm. in. And, you know, then you feel so much better and you're like, oh, okay. That's what I was so scared of or worried about. But I think when you kind of talk yourself through that a little bit and slow down and recognize it, then it's a lot easier to handle.
I agree. And, you know, that's unfortunately American culture, right? So whatever we're thinking in our brain is mm-hmm. never as great as what actually happens.
Oh, so no, it's the worry that builds up. Like,
definitely.
And listen, I used to be like a number one worrier, let me tell you. So I am compassionate towards that and yes. understand it. But we build things up in our head all the time.
Correct.
And all
it's
the time.
Never as grand as you think it's going to
no.
be. And therein is where mindfulness can come into play because, you know, we're freaking out over something that A, hasn't happened yet.
Yes.
Or B, might never happen. So we have to learn how to take those breaths and take a moment.
Yeah. We can't always live with like the what ifs, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We've got to just take a breath, calm down. And be as present as possible.
Agreed.
So what? So you have this book?
Oh goodness. Okay.
I mean, it seems like an appropriate time to talk about it. Navigating Middle School: A Guide for Parents and Teens. So this is related to a lot of the mindfulness, correct?
There are some pieces in there that mm-hmm. Kind of relate back. But at this time, when I first started writing this, mm-hmm. this was my second year into teaching. And it really started going through all the things that were frustrating about teaching. And I know that's terrible to say at first, but it was all those frustrations that turned into, okay, listen, mm-hmm. we need to talk to our kids about bullying. We need to talk to our kids about sex. We need to talk to our kids about drugs. And we can't just brush those things under the rug. And so each chapter has a little bit about what teens might experience, social media, things like that. And then at the end of each chapter, there's a final five. Mm-hmm. So that final five is like five things that a parent or teen could start implementing or doing in their own home. To help them navigate those specific things, such as bullying and drugs and sex.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So it's recognizing the problem.
Correct.
Correct. Okay. And then tools to be able to deal with them.
Definitely.
I mean, that seems like some good mindfulness right
yeah.
there.
So it took me, you know, I wrote it really quickly in the beginning, and then I kind of, you know, shoved it away and didn't look at it for probably the next 5 years. And then I just was like, I've got this here. I'm just going to publish. And so for those of you who would like to self-publish.
Yes, I'm one of those people. Yep. Yep.
But it is selling on Amazon, and I'm so grateful that, you know, my friends and family have read it. And to this day, my mom still has the original and she's editing it.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
So hopefully she'll give me the edited copy when she's finished so I can go back and redo it. But yeah, just being aware and mindful of the things that teenagers are going through and how to help them cope with those things and give them strategies to do so. I think that's really important.
Well, and I think, you know, you bring up the best point is you need to talk to them about it. Like, they need to know that it's okay to communicate and be open about stuff. And, you know, there's a lot of things that they have to deal with now that may have been different from years ago. You know, it always evolves, the issues at hand. But just being that supportive person in their lives to go to and be able to talk about anything that they need is the most important thing.
Yeah, and I think one of the chapters, especially the one on social media, is teaching your child to be mindful of the things that they are posting or that they want to post and shouldn't post.
Right.
And so having that conversation with your child about what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. And I think so often we are leaving a teen to their own devices and you know, letting them have their phones at night. And one of the things that I disagree with is letting your child have any sort of technology or any sort of device in their bedroom, because not only does it take away from their sleep, but now they're also on social media and they're worrying about what this friend is saying and they're not saying anything back. And so I think it really does a disservice to our child if they're always worried about the next big thing or what's my friend doing.
Right, exactly. And we all need, like, you know, and I tell this to people too, it's like bedtime routines. Like, you know, we have them as kids, like we need them as adults. But the same would go for your middle schooler or teenager. You know, it's like they're with devices all day. And I feel like even in school now, a lot of it is taken away from books and it's more on tablets and digital. And they need that, you know, they need that break. They need that time. Definitely. So it's like, take that away, you know, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, whatever it is. It's like no tech, no phones, no whatever. And just, you know, chill and relax.
And one of the things, you know, we talked about in my mindfulness course is that whole connection and belonging piece. And we are so, even as adults, we're so inundated with text messages and things like you said, but we don't have connection with people as much as we used to. And so the level of empathy and the level of compassion has just diminished so much because instead of looking at somebody in the eye and having that conversation, I'm texting you that message.
Right.
And so I have also found that that's really, really important as we move forward, is to make sure that we're having those authentic, compassionate conversations with each other.
For sure. I mean, you know, it's all about balance, right? So now, yes, we're in this world of technology and it can be very useful for certain things. Great. But we can't forget that piece. You know, it's just human nature. Like, we need to be able to connect with each other. And if it's family time, friend time, you know, whatever it is. But like I've always said, the most important thing to me, I think, in life is relationships with people.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can feed off of, you know, people's energy and just having that bond with others. It does so much for your mood and, you know, happiness and it the love. You need that.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to, you know, can you imagine if we were having this conversation, like, just over text message?
Like, oh,
but it's like to laugh together, to cry together, to be, you know, to hug. I mean, hugs are one of my favorite things, but it's like we just need to have that compassion and love. You know, when you can't have that with your phone.
No.
Just saying.
And you can't fake it either. So
no, absolutely not. Definitely not. So your book, this book you just published like 6 months ago.
Yes. Finally, so over the summer, towards the end of the summer, I decided I was having a conversation with my personal trainer at the time. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, there was just something in that conversation where he motivated me to just do it. And I was like, right on. So I decided I'm going to research this and how do I do it. And I didn't want to go looking for a publisher because I'm like, meh, maybe later.
Right.
So I just got on Amazon and they do publishing through there. And
they do. They don't do cookbooks, though. Just saying.
No.
Oh. I'm researching that. Just a side note for anybody out there.
So I was just like, bam. I'm doing it.
You know, timing is everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was something you worked on. You started years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, you have the bones for it, the outline, and you need to let it sit a little bit and you come back to it. And, you know, it was sometimes things come more to the forefront of your mind and you're like, oh, you know, I need to pick up on that again. And the timing was perfect for you.
Well, it was perfect. And then it also transpired with my business too. And so as I was looking back at the writing and things like that, it was like a domino effect, right? So
that's a good segue.
The book.
But go ahead.
The book got published, and I had actually in May signed the dotted line to establish my business officially. And
congrats.
So thank you. It was like definitely exciting, mm-hmm. and rewarding. And part of my business mainly is to help teachers write and help teachers write curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
And I have found that as a health and PE teacher, that there's nobody out there that does that. Right. I could have somebody come in and tell me how to write social studies, and that's great, and there are those consultants out there. But I was doing my own research and not finding specific PE and health people. And so that kind of got my wheels cooking, and here we are.
I mean, I remember you, like, when we talked about this and you have these ideas and wanted mm-hmm. to start your own business, and, you know, that was just a great niche and a need because there was nobody else out there doing that. And and all falling in line too. It's like if you're, you know, you're helping teachers and schools writing curriculum, to have your own book published is writing, you know, it all just comes together to kind of give that validity too. Like, you know, this is, I'm an author and self-published, and, you know, that's just, I think that's a great tool that people can now utilize you and your mm-hmm. business to facilitate that stuff. And I mean, schools can use you, districts, teachers, individuals. So kind of tell us a little bit like how the layout works for your services and your business.
So it depends on the need, mm-hmm. of course. And like you said, I could help individual teachers, or I could go into a school district and help. I also can help fine arts teams. So music, drama, band, art, things mm-hmm. like that. But one of the biggest things is offering them the tools and the ideas on how to actually break down their national standards. And that's one of the biggest things. So in the state of Illinois, you have either state standards or national standards.
Mm-hmm.
I use the national standards, but they can go any which way you want it. So it's tailored towards that person or towards that district. So if they are saying, okay, I want to use the national standards, great. Well, now there's substandards under there. So it's breaking up those mm-hmm. to actually make them whatever priority you want.
Okay.
You don't have to use them all, which I think is a misconception for many teachers. You, like, for health, there are 8. I only use 6 of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a misconception. But helping them organize, decide what they want to use as a priority. And then after that, it's coming up with the assessment, the rubric. How are you going to do this? Do you want 6 weeks? Or how many weeks do you get? Because I am blessed in the fact that I have my students for 12 weeks.
Yeah.
Some health teachers have them for 3.
Right.
Some have them once a week
mm-hmm.
For 6 weeks. So
wow.
It runs the gamut. And I think that's the hard part to pinpoint.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really good at tailoring what that individual might need or what that district might need. Right. And that's a conversation with their administrators, which I'll go in, have a conversation with administrators, and then I'll give them a complementary needs assessment to kind of give them an idea of what their department might need. And then we'll come back to the drawing board and see.
Create the strategy.
Yeah.
Well, that's, I mean, giving them that education and that breakdown, I think, and being that guide to mm-hmm. creating like an outline of what they really need to focus on or not, or it, creating that structure, mm-hmm. I think is huge. I mean, that's what yeah. that's what people need.
Yeah,
is that guidance.
And that's one of the things I'm really good at mm-hmm. is the structure piece. So right. if you need, I don't know, if you need a specific assessment for content and knowledge, okay, fine. I can help you create that, or I can actually give you the standard that you want to use to create that.
Right.
So I think one of the biggest things as teachers we forget sometimes is, am I assessing what I really want the student to know, understand, and be able to do?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the further along you get into the profession, you either get really good at it or you're like, meh.
Or you kind of forget about it a little bit.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like,
yeah.
Oh, I need
What's
to come back to
here?
This.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's the other reason for the business too, is I was kind of getting away from that. And I was just teaching health. And mm-hmm. there wasn't a whole lot of substance behind the assessments I was giving or purpose. And so relearning that and then helping my fine arts team create their curriculum, it was a huge eye-opener for me.
Wow, now you're helping all these other people.
I hope so.
That's amazing. I mean,
I hope so.
You are. So I feel like that, well, first of all, and we're going to talk about this at the end too, but where can people, what is the website? It's CICstrategies.org, right?
It is.
For people to be able to find that.
Yes.
And on that website, there you also have a blog.
Right. And so I blog about anything curriculum. So I'm a nerd and I love doing it. And, you know,
I love that.
When people write curriculum, you either love it or hate it. I love it. And I could sit there and write it all day long if you ask me. But on the website, there's a blog, and it essentially connects curriculum to a variety of different topics that are going on in our lives. So I had one blog where I was doing a RUC training.
Mm-hmm.
So for those of you who have been in the military or are familiar with the military, they do RUC training. So mm-hmm. all these different things. And I hated it. I was in there. I was like,
for the record,
this is not
this
for
is
me.
Not what I want to do.
So it's funny because I related one of the blogs to RUCing and curriculum, right? So
things can always tie in,
right? It was like, and part of it was, you know, you either love writing curriculum or you don't.
Yeah,
and you either love RUCing or you don't. So the blog has some information, just fun things like that, but it also has different ways, different questions you can ask yourself as you're creating your curriculum. You know, what do you want? What are you looking for? What do you want the students to know? So there's a variety of different, and they're fun. They're whimsical, I'd mm-hmm. like to think. But, you know, we'll bring curriculum into your life in every which way.
That's awesome. I love that. I love that. And it ties everything in together, that everything you kind of focus on and that you're
right.
about.
Yeah, one of the more recent ones was actually mindfulness in the classroom and how does that relate to the curriculum. So if you're interested in that topic, I highly recommend going to give that a read.
That's amazing. So CICstrategies.org, and then you have a Facebook page also for that?
I do have a Facebook page, and it's... You're going to kill me, people, because I don't remember. But it's Allison.Fink is my Facebook
okay.
handle.
There we go.
So, If you find me on Facebook, Allison R. Fink, you'll be able to go to the page as well.
Awesome. Awesome. So I think we can kind of have a little segue into talking about Reiki.
Yes.
And I really want to get your perspective as, you know, coming from the client end of what you experience. And, you know, for a lot of you who don't know, I've been a Reiki practitioner for, that's a good question. Like probably the past 5 years. But it's something I've always done. I've always been a natural healer in my profession, being an esthetician and makeup artist. I've always wanted to help others, always through like the form and power of touch. I think, with massage and facials and all of that, it's just, I've loved being able to put people at ease. Mm-hmm. We'll say that. And I think I've also been somebody who people really feel comfortable talking to. And I'm so grateful that people are able to trust me and kind of open up. Yep. I treat that like gold. So Reiki is a form of energy healing is really what it is. And, you know, we have 7 different chakras in the body. And a lot of times just to kind of logistically tell you what a Reiki session looks like, you're going to be laying down. Every practitioner can do something different, but I have my client come in, they lay, in comfortable on the bed, and I have nice, spa music on. But I like to usually clear kind of the energy out and the person. A lot of people refer to it as smudging. You can use sage. I love Palo Santo wood. It's like an incense. It's amazing. It just kind of clears out a lot of the negative energy. Mm-hmm. And then I use a lot of lavender essential oils, and I walk people through a guided meditation. There is some physical touch where I am touching the person. You're fully clothed, so it's not like, a standard massage. But a lot of times I am just using my hands kind of hovering over the body, and usually the different chakras that run from, your crown down to your base, kind of, torso, pelvis area, through the center. So I'm able to kind of sense where there's a lot of like blockages or energy that needs to be cleared out. Now, as I talk about this, I'm very realistic about Reiki. Some people are not open to it. I'm a big believer in balance, and I'm not to one extreme or the other. This is not like woo-woo stuff. It can be in your mind, but it's really taking time out. It's an hour session for yourself to relax, to be mindful, to be aware, to not have stress, to be in a safe, comfortable zone that you can just let go and release all of your tension. And once I'm actively doing the Reiki for about 30 minutes, I'll, be touching, walking around, kind of clearing stuff. Then we are able to talk about the experience. Once I bring you back into, from the meditation, we talk about what you felt. I sometimes, more than not, pick up on, different messages or things that I can relate to you. And we usually get a lot of confirmation on that. But there's oftentimes an emotional release as well, be it feeling that weight lifted off or, emotional, like there can be tears, there can be joy, a lot of different things. But, I think of it as just a therapy session with my clients. So all that being said, being open to it it's always a better result where you can kind of feel the benefits a little bit more. But as I kind of stop talking here, I want to hear your perspective of how you feel after you have a Reiki session and what it's like for you laying there on that table.
I will tell you initially, so I'm very open-minded to it. And I think, like you mentioned, that's a huge component. Because if you're not open-minded to it, you're not going to seek the benefits that Reiki can offer. I was actually introduced to Reiki probably 20 years ago when I was a personal trainer. Mm-hmm. And somebody had mentioned it to me. Actually, it was one of my clients who was starting to practice. And I went to her house. She did a Reiki session for me. She's like, listen, this is what it is. This is how it's going to happen, just as you described. And it was wild. Like I started seeing these different, I started seeing these different colors. Mm-hmm. And you know, she didn't know boo about me or my personal life really. And so the after session was very similar to what you describe. You just have this enlightenment or this clarity.
Yes, love it, clarity.
That you didn't initially have when you walked in. And I think that's really important. I know several times I've gone to see Jen when I've been experiencing some emotional issues, you know, death in the family, death of a coworker recently. And so being able to go to Reiki and really cleanse those specific emotions from my body, I know it sounds hokey, but it works. And when I leave there, I feel energized and yes. I feel clear. And I also feel very motivated to go do stuff. You know, so whatever the case may be, like,
I love
you know,
it.
If I need some clarity when I am writing, Reiki offers that, which is so amazing that you know, writer's block. So for those of you who are writers out there, go to Reiki. It'll offer some clarity, maybe perhaps on where you want your book to go or whatever it is that you're writing, so that you can have that clearer thought and clearer image of what your end goal is.
Definitely. I love that you do get a sense of clarity. You know, it really is as simple as saying, this is just going to be some stress relief and time out for yourself.
Yeah.
It's you time that you're scheduling. You know, don't even think about it as like, oh gosh, what is this like spiritual stuff that I'm about to go do? But it does serve a purpose, and you do physically as well as mentally feel so much better and lighter and clear. And the reason being is you're carrying around, like we talked about, you are carrying around all of this emotion,
right,
that you are not paying attention to or recognizing or being aware of. And it is physically mm-hmm. blocking you. So being able to have someone help clear that out, it's like I am pulling out any of that negativity literally out of your body and clearing it so that you can't help but feel this release.
I think one of the statements you use pretty often with me, I know, is just letting that clear, bright, white light
yes.
in. Am I saying mm-hmm. it right?
Yes, you are. The golden white light.
Yes. I think for me, like when I'm in a session and you say that, like I can visualize what that looks like. Mm-hmm. And I visualize the energy that is coming in and letting go of all the other toxic nonsense that's in there.
Yes. And that's something good, you know, and that's why I do the guided meditation. And I know a lot of other practitioners do, because it is hard to just lay there mm-hmm. and, you know, quiet your mind down a little bit. So having something to visualize is always great. Visualization is very important, mm-hmm. Especially for specific goals that we may want. But attaching that visual aid to the breath of mm-hmm. let me breathe in when I'm inhaling, I'm taking in all the positive golden white light.
Right.
When I'm exhaling, I'm getting rid of all the stress and the negative dark gray energy. Attaching that, I think, definitely helps. Whether it be, you know, with emotions, or I even have a lot of jujitsu athletes that come in for Reiki before tournament too, because we know wow. we can be as physically ready as we need to be, but it's that mental part of competing definitely. Or speaking in front of others or whatever it may be. To get rid of that fear, you know, you just feel so much more grounded and present and strong and empowered. You know, if our solar plexus is not acting right, and that's kind of just right in the center there of the gut, right under the heart, we need to, you know, kind of boost that confidence a little bit and that courage.
Yeah, I think one of the things you touch on that's really important is just that being present piece. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can be present physically. We often are, but we tend to not be present mentally. And
Absolutely.
I think that is a huge component to everything we're talking about, the Reiki, the mindfulness, the meditation, mm-hmm. everything.
For sure. We wander sometimes in our minds, try to work a mile a minute. And it's like, we need to, you know, just be in that moment, take a day at a time, a moment mm-hmm. at a time. You know, I think that's the thing. We try and like do way too much, and we need to just slow it down, you know, yeah. slow down for a second. And it goes to that mindfulness of, you know, realizing, like, paying attention to, what am I doing? Why am I doing it? That's something that I love. Mm-hmm. It's like, ask yourself those questions. What am I doing and why am I doing it? Let's get back to that purpose, you know, and mission for ourselves. And I think, you know, Reiki is one of those things that it's beneficial. Like you said, you come in when you feel like you're struggling mm-hmm. or, you know, you're going through something that's very emotional. People will come in. I have people that come in weekly. I have people that come in seasonally, you know, whenever, when it's an emergency and they just need to get in. Mm-hmm. But the more you do it, I think the more you experience in a session and the more you are exercising that mind and the more clarity that you have and more of the grounding that you get on a consistent basis, and you keep that feeling longer. Mm-hmm. Plus, you know, we talk about tools that you can do at home, whether it be journaling, you know, guided meditations, just positive self-talk, you know, just recognizing things. And you do learn the art of detachment, which, you know, I think is an incredible thing. Just being able to kind of step out of that situation and look at it from a different viewpoint is super, super important.
I agree. And I believe you mentioned this earlier. Reiki is, it's not therapy as if you're going into somebody and spewing your whole entire life story. Mm-hmm. You know, Reiki is just this calming release, as we've yeah. talked about and mentioned. And I really think that's important as people start to be more mindful of their emotions and how they're feeling. And I want to preface this by saying everybody can do Reiki. It's not just a woman thing, okay?
And everyone.
I think men have a misconception about, you know, it being kind of foo-foo, but I really believe that it helps everybody, and it helps us be more kind and compassionate, and even having that self-compassion for our own personal living.
If we don't take care of ourselves, we cannot take care of that whole army that we need to. You know, we have to be, you know, sufficient, and we're the only ones that can do that for ourselves. So we should be the priority. It is not selfish. So I've talked about this so many times. Self-care is mm-hmm. crucial.
It's that whole concept of when you get on a flight.
Yes.
And they plane, talk yep. to you about putting your oxygen mask on first. And what's interesting is I've heard that so many times mm-hmm. in probably the last couple of years. But it's true, right? We can't do anything for others unless we're yes. doing it for ourselves first.
If we are not strong and loving ourselves, it is hard to be able to love someone else, to take mm-hmm. care of someone else. We need to show ourselves all that. We always worry about everybody else.
I know.
Always. And not to say that you shouldn't do that, but you got to turn that around a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, we need that self-love. It's like back to that being gentle, being kind, like, because when you leave that Reiki session, you do feel like you have so much energy. Yeah. All that weight that's been holding you down is lifted. You are so energetic. You're so motivated. It's like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do what I need to do, yeah. you know, and you're just so excited. And even if it's something that's been emotional, you know, and Allison touched on something, a really good point is, I do call it like a spiritual, you know, therapy session, but you get to just lay there and relax. You get to just be. You don't have to talk about anything. Oftentimes people do find at the end of the session, they do have this emotion coming out, or they want to talk about how they felt, or I'll share what, you know, came up for me and the thoughts. And usually it's something that hits home, you know, pretty hard. But being able to then like have that release and have someone trusted that you can talk to about it, I think is just, you know, a priceless experience.
Yeah. Any teacher out there or any counselor, social worker, anybody in the school industry who, or the educational industry, who has to deal with students on a daily basis, you know, we're taking up all of their stuff and their problems and how they're living their lives that a lot of times we do forget about our own. And so I highly recommend Reiki to teachers and or social workers, anybody who's in that profession.
Anyone in the healing service profession, you know, where people are coming to you as a guide, you have to take care of yourself to be able to take care of them in that role. And I'm so glad, you know, you brought that up too, because something that I'll always tell people, and it sounds so silly, but you need to envision wrapping yourself in like a golden bubble. Because you have to protect yourself from, we don't want to take in other people's energy, you know, especially if it's toxic or people try and a lot of positive people and healers, people want to like suck that life out of them.
Right.
So you need to kind of have that barrier, like just envision that bubble. You're chilling in that bubble, walking around in that bubble, and you're not going to allow, you know, someone else's energy to kind of affect yours.
I believe John Gordon calls that a vampire suck.
It's psychic vampirism.
it's the best phrase.
But it's true. There are psychic vampires out there, and they will suck the life and blood out of people who walk around with that, you know, energy.
Yeah.
You can't let people do that.
No.
You have to. You can help, you know, others, but you need to protect yourself at the same time.
That's not to say that we don't fall into that pattern sometimes of our own, but that's when we have to go out and seek the help through Reiki or mindfulness or meditation.
Exactly. Get right back on that track.
Yep.
For sure. Well, this has been amazing.
Thank you so much. I mean,
we talked about a lot of stuff, right? I'm like, this has been awesome. Everything we wanted to touch on. Was there anything else that you wanted to add before we close out our episode?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't want people to have this conception of, oh, you do mindfulness all the time. It's always a practice, and it's never perfect. And to say that, you know, the other day I tried to sit down and I just couldn't get there. So, you know, with anything that you're doing, it's always a practice, and we have to throw the perfection piece out the window.
It's progress, not perfection, baby.
Exactly.
That's, you know, we can't, it comes back to being gentle with yourself.
Yep.
You do what you can.
Yep.
But implementing that piece and that practice for you, taking time for you, I think is the most important thing that you should take away from this conversation.
I agree.
And you guys, any questions or topics you want to hear about, go to my Facebook page. You can send me a message at Getting Zen with Jen Z. And I want to thank you again, Allison, for coming and taking
the time for this conversation.
It's been amazing.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. I will talk to you guys soon. Thanks. Bye.